Welcome back to The Real Big Show. My name is Michael Petrelli. Tonight, I am joined by the one and only, thank God, Mr. Brad Slayton. Bradley, how are you?
I have a twin roaming around somewhere.
And we're happy to welcome our next guest, Jeremy Hainan, hails from the Great White North. He has been involved in all aspects of the industry, including acting, writing, producing, directing, and festivals. He has directed an award-winning music video. We'll get to that later. Jeremy, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So tonight we're going to talk a little bit about filmmaking. We have two great examples of up-and-coming filmmakers. So I figured, what the hell? We're going to dedicate this show, the entire podcast, to the art of filmmaking. So let's dive in. So I'm going to throw you right to the fire, Jeremy. How did you first decide that acting was a career path best suited for you?
It really came from Dan Aykroyd. The way that my parents tell the story is, they got Ghostbusters on VHS and I would just watch it over and over and over again. And that became like my babysitter. And, I got to about 5-6 years old and I told them when I grow up, I want to be a Ghostbuster, just like Ray, my favorite Ghostbuster. And so they said that they waited a bit and then they, you know, decided to break the news to me that, well, Jeremy, see, you can't grow up and be a Ghostbuster because they're not real. Those are actors and that's a movie. So they tried to explain it to me and I said, well, fine then. I'll grow up to be a writer and actor like Dan Aykroyd then if he's an actor. And I started watching SNL, the old school SNL, and it all went from there.
I think that's pretty much the best answer I've ever had and ever asked a filmmaker of that question. That's fantastic. Dan Aykroyd. Bradley.
Yeah.
Original content. How do you begin to develop a film?
Oh, God. I've got a million of them in my head. I'm not, like, classically trained at all. I have, like, no schooling or anything. It's just, like, what's the craziest shit that I've never seen? Like, remakes drive me crazy. Rehashes, reboots, whatever you call it. Like, I want to see original, you know, ideas thrown up. And thus far, you know, the budget hasn't been there for all the craziness, but working on it.
So, I'm trying to figure out how to answer this question the best way for Jeremy. How does the process, whether you've written the film or you're adapting it, does it differ in any way, either way, for you?
Each project's been completely different. I've never had a project that has worked out the same, even if I try to work it in the same way, it ends up coming out. It's a very intuitive process for me, so it's a matter of which doors open up.
Do you prefer, because you've done both music video and you've also done short film, do you appreciate both for what they are, or do you have a specific like or dislike about each of those different entities in the film world?
When it comes to music videos and doing video work, I really like doing short experimental works. I'm really inspired by David Lynch's short experimental films.
Okay.
And those. And so, you know, I feel like there's no limitation with that, and I can just go as far as I want, or as crazy and weird and original, and just, you know, and usually I'm putting my own money into it, and it's not, you don't have to spend that much money, or, you know, I don't even need to use actors or sometimes, and so, you know, it's really like a limitless world.
Okay.
While when I was working on something that was originally a feature and then ended up getting cut down to a short, the limitations start to come in. And yet, at the same time, you learn to respect and work within those limitations. And so it's very, it's two different worlds. And yet I gotta say that I do love having that free reign of, you know, being able to be as original as possible and not having any restraints. I mean, that's always amazing, right?
But yeah,
I do love the other way as well.
Cool. So I gotta ask Brad, I know that you've been filming a lot of like horror film shorts. Do you have a particular time of day that's important to you or basically is it more important to film the scene based on the timing of the day, or is it just what feels right for you?
It's just when the people will show up, you know, and what we can have and what time people are willing to open their doors to us. And like this music video that we just shot Sunday, we had the bar from like the bar on the outside, the exterior of the bar from like noon to 9 or 10 at night. But, you know, we didn't do any outside night shoots. So, you know, from 3 o'clock to 9 o'clock was indoors. So, I mean, shoot, if I have free will, I'd love to shoot stuff at night. But it's just, I mean, when you're doing stuff on favors and like, hey, can you open this or can you do this? It's more, you know, whatever time everyone can give you.
Right. So you're kind of the constraints of working around other people's schedules.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And if they want to sleep in or not.
Yeah. Well, that's what every actor wants to do is sleep in. So, Jeremy, how do you choose the shooting locations for your shorts?
Yeah, it really comes down to who will let me in their homes. right now, the short that I'm working on, the whole story came out of walking around. I have a good friend named Steven, and just wandering around this area of Vancouver called New Westminster. And it's just very, you know, there's a lot of old heritage buildings and I guess it's the place where when the settlers were, you know, where they decided that this was the perfect place for them to build a city, and because it's all on a hill, right?
Right.
A very steep hill, so they could see the enemy coming, right? If anybody was coming, and just like walking around, and there's these old statues of these deities that I hadn't even heard of before, and I'm reading on these old plaques that are covered in spider webs, like. The story behind this deity that they've made a statue out of, and it's been there since I can't remember any dates right now, but seeing that, and then also seeing how they're like trying to make New West more, you know, because Vancouver just keeps on spreading and spreading and spreading, so they've added in new, they're always adding on to the SkyTrain and that. And so now we're getting all these, there's literally 4 Starbucks within one block. So it's just like all of these, you know, you got your McDonald's. There's no McDonald's yet, but you know that there's one coming. And then you got 2 Subways like across the street from each other right now. And so you have all this new things coming in, but they're trying to keep everything old as well. And so it's this weird mix of this old, like, world from, like, 100 years ago to these newer new structures and metallic and glass buildings and all of that. So it's a really weird clash. And so that the story kind of started coming out of that and taking these late walks at night and just, like, looking around and going, whoa, like, there's a really weird feeling here. And so I think that's definitely where if I think back to a lot of my shorts, that's where the inspiration comes from, is just being in certain places, right?
So it's kind of like just you coming across something and it just triggers an inspiration. Maybe it changes something in the script?
Yeah, it's or even a story just starts developing right then and there as you're walking through it. It's like, well, what if, you know, this happened here? Or what if there was a dead body lying here right now and we just happened to walk by it? Like, what would we do? Where, you know, where would things go from there?
Right.
And then we end up running back to my place and just start writing, you know, I just start shooting ideas. And Steven's he just sits silently and kind of organizes my thoughts for me.
Awesome. We all need one of those people. I know I do. Oh, yeah. Brad, do you work with the same crew usually, or do you bring in new faces for each project?
Well, the DP on my first one has given up the ghost. So I would love this music video for Zombie Werewolves from Outer Space. The crew that we had on that was amazing. Like, these grips, we somehow lucked into getting four professional grips that came with like a trailer full of lighting and everything for completely no charge.
Wow.
And like an awesome makeup effects artist, and Nathan shot it, you know, that's on the horror cast. And I mean, it was just boom, 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 like so smooth, not a single issue. And it's like, wow, this is a family here, you know, like this runs flawlessly. So God, if I can keep that together, we're golden. Just throw in Gary Busey and we're good.
Well, you ever get him, trust me, you're all be there.
That would be epic.
Jeremy, what's your favorite thing about the actual production of the film?
I guess there's certain points and all in definitely the point in the writing when you have that breakthrough and the story all comes together. There's that moment. There's the moment when you're all together and you're shooting it and it's working. And then there's the moment in editing when you realize that there was more than you had planned on working itself out on its own. Those three moments are the greatest moments.
Do you have any issues when you're writing something where you find yourself, it's been there for so long, and then once it starts to go on paper, you're like, you know what? Everything that I've always wanted is not working right now. I have to change it.
Usually it comes from, if that does happen, it's usually someone else coming in and saying, if I'm co-writing something or that, they'll come in and be like, this doesn't work. We got to cut that out. And, we use the term killing your babies.
Yeah.
And so as a writer, you have to be ready to kill your babies. But I think it hurts more when other people kill your babies for you.
Oh, absolutely. I can never. Yeah, I mean, when I write stuff myself, you know, you have this idea, and that's kind of where I ask the question. I have a lot of times where I can go from point A to point B in an imagination in my head, and then once I start to put it down on paper and you start adding in those little intricacies, you start to realize that maybe it's time to take that left instead of that right, and this isn't going to work anymore. And, or maybe it can be changed or put it in a different place. So I find myself that I'm my own worst critic. I think that there's not another person that can kill my baby worse than me, I think.
Yeah, I'm definitely my worst critic too. I know what that's like.
Yeah. Brad, are you an actor's director, or are you more of a work first, fun later guy?
Oh no, I'm an actor's director. Like, oh my gosh, if you watch the B-roll from what we shot this past week, like it's and Jeremy actually told me this, you know, it was like, because I was told with the music video, like, any advice, you know, you know, he's like, have fun. I was like, well, I always have fun, but yeah, definitely have fun. But, it was just a blast. Like, everyone is really, I'm not going to be one of these Nazi directors, you know, that's like, whipping people and like putting them in danger, unless it's Scott, my main actor. So yeah, everything's smooth right now. Like I haven't had a catastrophe, knock on wood, yet. So everything has been so silky smooth.
So I'll go to you, Jeremy, and I'll kind of ask Brad to follow up on this one. Are either of you very hands-on in the post-production of your filmmaking, like sound editing, et cetera?
Oh man, I love sound. I love music. I love that whole aspect. So if I can get in, I just love jumping in FL Studios and Sony Acid and all that kind of stuff. And sound is so important to me, so important. And I just love to get in on it as much as possible.
Do you write any of your own music, or do you rely on somebody else?
I have a guy that I go to, and he's the one who taught me the little bit of guitar that I know how to play. Basically everything I've either, you know, taught myself or learned through him. And he'll sometimes send me pieces of music while I'm writing something. I'll kind of give him an idea of what I'm writing or what the images that I'm trying to bring together. And then he'll send me a piece of music, and we go back and forth. But now that we're both living in the same city, we're able to sit down together in front of the computer and get out the guitars and really just get crazy with it.
Cool. Brad?
Yeah, I'm more of a leave it to the people who are doing it. And then if I don't like it, say, no, this doesn't work, and then save more what I'm looking for. Like, I go through this weird thing, like, as soon as like the shoot's over, like I want to shoot again. Like I just forget about the rest of it. I'm like, shoot more, you know, here's this idea. Like I become like an Energizer Bunny of just wanting to shoot the next day. And, you know, I mean, that's what other people are for. And then if I don't like it, it's like, no, that's more of this or more of that. Or, you know, can we use this shot or this shot? Like I have not edited anything, you know, but I have an opinion on what I want to see.
Right. So what is the hardest part for both of you about getting your films out there? We'll start with Brad first.
I can get them out there. I just need to get them out there to people who will say, hey, I mean, I'm not expecting like a Michael Bay budget here, you know? I'm just asking for a couple of measly bucks for, you know, God, this is going to sound horrible to actors, legitimate actors, or, you know, insane effects. Like, I mean, I'm just sitting on scripts that are finished and ready to roll, but it's like, yeah, I can't do that without a budget.
I thought you were going to say enough money to buy sandwiches.
No sandwiches. Soup only.
Soup only for your actors.
Yes, yes. Soup and a slice of bread. Water if they do a good job, you know?
Cold water if they do a good job.
Yeah, yeah.
Jeremy, do you have any critiquing ideas on how to get your film out there?
You know, festivals are where it was at for me for a long time. And then being on the other side of it and directing, you know, being a festival director, it was, I saw how, you know, when I finished the last two shorts that went out to the festivals, and that I kind of started getting, like, do these people even watch these movies? You know, like, and then someone recommended this film where literally this guy was sending out, you know, he was paying the festival fees, you know, the submission fees, and sending out a blank DVDRs to these festivals, and then getting these rejection letters back. And it was like they weren't even watching.
Wow.
They weren't even watching them, right? So, you know, being a festival director myself, all of a sudden seeing the other side of it and seeing how much crap you have to go through, like, there is so much garbage out there, so much garbage. And it's literally like going, you know, being up to your waist in black oil and picking up rocks from the bottom of it. And, you know, every couple of weeks you find a gem, and it's just like, when you do find that gem, you go around to everybody else that you're working with, and it's like, I found one. Yeah. But, there's a lot of garbage out there, but when you do find that good one, it brings back the excitement and reminds you why you're doing it. So, I think that's really set me up to where I'm at now with this new short that I'm working on, is that I kind of, having seen what, you know, the people that have to wade through the crap and all the garbage, you know, what they're looking for, what's going to stand out, right? And what's going to get audience reaction. And so that's, I see things from a totally different perspective now. But I think it's interesting. It's really like, if you want to, you can go through festivals, but then you got to pay the submission fees. And if you don't have the money for the submission fees, then really you can go to Vimeo or YouTube, and then people are watching it for free. It really is just, you want to get your name out there and just get it out there. Or if you want to, you know, get an audience, and it really comes down to how much money you have left once it's done, right? So it's a different world now.
Yeah, and like you said, you've seen it on both sides, doing the festivals, and you've worked on, you know, managing to create this festival. I mean, do you have to watch all the films yourself before they get, when they get submitted, or are you leaving that up to other people to put their two cents into what should make it and what should not?
So the way that we did it was, so any of the narrative shorts or features, I would usually watch the first 10 minutes of, and if it kept me wanting to watch it, I would watch it all the way through. And if it was getting a little too hard to get through, then I would pass it on to one of the other volunteers. And we had a system where at least three of the volunteers who were watching the submissions, three of them had to, you know, give it a definite no. This isn't worth passing on to the rest of them or for anybody else to have to watch.
Gotcha. Brad, do you have a follow up?
Yeah. I was just, Jeremy, being on both sides of it, like, especially, you know, you were talking about YouTube and Vimeo and the aspect of getting out for free and paying. As a festival director, now that you've seen both sides, how much do the politics play in? Like, say there is an amazing film by, you know, an unknown, but yet you've got a film by an established filmmaker, yet the film sucks. Is there, you know, and you've got that filmmaker going, oh, I'll make an appearance at your festival if you put that in, and you got one spot. How much politicalness is going on to bring the shitty film by a known filmmaker versus, you know, a film that's amazing by a nobody?
See, that's what's interesting. I'm not going to name any festivals, but there are festivals that do take that bigger name. He's saying he's going to show up. You know, we got, for instance, one of the films that was going around at the time was David Cronenberg's, I think, Dangerous Method, the one with Keira Knightley.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sorry, but I just thought that was crap. And, you know, there were other festivals that were just jumping on it and, you know, who cares what the, you know, whether the film, you know, it's got big stars and it's a Cronenberg film. Of course we're going to put that into our best slot that we have, or one of the best slots that we have. And then that great feature by an unknown filmmaker, you know, that gets thrown aside. And so that was my thing, was with the festival that I was doing, was no, it doesn't matter who they are and how much respect I have for them. If the film is bad, the, you know, we're going to go with the, we're going to give the nobody the chance to have his film at the, in that slot or, so that was my thing. So I wanted to, how do we put it? Support and nourish new talent. But there are, it's kind of sad how many festivals are out there that are all just about getting that, those big names, right? So,
yeah. So yours was a rarity, you would say. I mean, you would say more will take someone like a Ty West who puts out a shitty film over someone who is the next Cronenberg.
Right.
Okay.
If you guys could direct your passion project, no stipulations, I'm giving you the bank, what would it be? God. Jeremy, what would it be? It could be something that you've always wanted to do because you've written it. It could be something that you want to, I'm going to get killed if I say the word remake by Brad.
You are.
reimagine.
I'm the Jersey Petrelli.
It could be anything you want. If you could do it, what would it be?
You know, it's a toss up between two different. There's a novel I'd love to adapt called Hard Boiled Wonderland and the End of the World by Haruki Murakami. I just want to see that brought to the big screen in the best way possible, and I just love that novel to no end. And then at the same time, it's actually a trilogy, I guess. But I'd love to get that first film out. And that one's called Thornhill. And I wrote the first draft of the screenplay, and it ended up coming out to over 300 pages when I was between 16 and 17 years old.
Wow. That's a definite passion project.
Yeah.
Brad, do you have something that, I mean, are we looking at Hardwood, the musical?
I've pitched a musical, and no one bites on it. They're all like, oh, are you flipping kidding me? But no, that's not my passion project. I've said many times on different shows and stuff like that, Giant Raccoon versus Mutant Possum, starring Gary Busey and Tom Sizemore, would be my passion project. Just an over the flipping top bashing of sci-fi, not the genre, but the channel that puts out these shitty animal films. Like, it would be so ridiculously, no CGI, all practical effects. Just, I mean, it would make the Expendables look bad. I'm talking just washed up talent who still have talent. You know what I mean?
So you want to make
the Expendables a fuck up, you know? Like Corey Feldman, I mean, just go balls out. Like I've got it, I'm ready. I just need money, and people to say yes, you know. So, I mean, it is ready to roll whenever.
I thought you were going to make My Life Story, you son of a bitch.
It's like a 10-minute thing. I can make it into a 10-minute short. Blah, blah, blah. I love Lord of the Rings and Channing Tatum. The end.
Oh, God.
And Yoo-Hoo. I forgot about Yoo-Hoo. But, yes.
Channing Tatum. My nemesis forever.
And Ryan Reynolds.
Oh, yeah. Terrible. But you know what? Both of them will get a project off the ground, wouldn't they?
Should I throw a copyright in there for Giant Raccoon vs. Mutant Possum? I guess so. It's copyrighted, damn it. I better not see it on Sci-Fi or Asylum. Christ sakes.
The producers of Sharknado 2 are now already in production on it.
But yeah. with Bob Uecker, right? Bob Uecker, yeah. And Tom Berenger and Dennis Haysbert. It's a major league reunion.
Brian Austin Green stars.
Oh, God. I would see that would just aggravate me to know. You have no clue how bad I hate that guy. Like, honestly, the biggest no-talent ass clown is Brian. Well, he's up there. He's in the Pathanon of them. Like, see, what? I mean, not to go off on a rant, but I mean, Gary Busey and Tom Sizemore still have talent. Like, they could still out act. They're just insane, you know? So I think I could corral that insanity into something wonderful. And I mean, I've got a B list of people if they don't take. I mean, there's plenty of crazy, insane actors out there.
Jeremy, I'm going to ask you the hardest question I'm going to ask you all night. What is the one thing that's wrong with filmmaking right now?
The studio's not open to originality. I think there's a serious lack of, even if it is something crazy and just way out there, like a giant awesome,
awesome.
You know, at least it's something new, right? While it just seems that even these indie films are starting to repeat themselves and being so overly sentimental and just straining, you know, trying to strain tears out of their audience's eyes, right? So you got these Hollywood studios doing nothing but sequels, prequels and remakes and reimaginings and reboots and all this kind of stuff. And then you have indie film, which is just, you know, repeating the same old thing, just trying to do whatever they can to make their audience cry. And it's really hard for something in between to come out, something that can be both funny and heartwarming, or something that can be horrific and make you, you know, I think we're at a point now in film where we need to, you know, we have these subgenres of subgenres of subgenres. And I think we really got to start embracing, you know, the hybrid genres now. Like, I love what some filmmakers are doing with the, you know, finally finding the balance between comedy and horror, right? I love what Edgar Wright's doing with the World's End, Shaun of the Dead, Hot Fuzz, like really, you know, blending it. But we need filmmakers coming and taking that and going even further, right? And just, I think that's what is really needed right now is things to go further.
Is there a possibility that we can find an original thought at this point? Or do you think that so many things have been retread over the last 60, 70 years that it's gotten to a point where even an original thought is subconsciously something that they're pulling from something they've seen in the past?
It's interesting because there's a screenplay I'm working on right now, and there's a lot of we'll be sitting there brainstorming, and it'll be like, well, that's too much like this movie, or that's too much like that movie. But you know, you start bringing in a lot of, you know, so many ideas, and yeah, some of them are going to be, you know, ideas that have been used in the past, but it's a matter of, you know, we have this big whiteboard that we jot everything down on. And I think it's a matter of just going, you know, straight through, and then eliminating the ideas that, you know, have started to become cliches now. And yeah, really just taking things in a new direction and being fearless. That's really what we need is people that are completely fearless and are ready to go that extra mile. And I think we will start to see things that we haven't seen before.
Yeah, I'm in agreement, because there's a few directors out there that for me really have shown they have something very special. You mentioned Edgar Wright. I like Rian Johnson, Gareth Edwards, Evans. You know, and then we find these guys and they start to show so much promise, and Hollywood kind of engulfs it. And then I think that sometimes they're neutered. But I think some of these new vibrant directors are really trying to push themselves and say, no, this is what I am. You want me, take it. If you don't, I'm not going to do it. And they'll go back to their indie films. But I think when guys that make movies like The Raid or The Raid 2, and they're just so much, they're not original in the sense of originality, but they have something that feels fresh and new. And then Hollywood wants to remake it because we're too stupid to watch a subtitled Malaysian film about somebody that we can't connect to. We need to have fucking Chris Hemsworth or somebody as the star. Like, it's, to me, I think we are cannibalizing young talent.
But you're not going to break that trend until, you know, a Marvel movie tanks or something like that tanks and you see a resurgence where you saw Tarantino and Smith and Rodriguez. Like, I mean, if you honestly think about it, like John Travolta shooting heroin, like if you pitch that to someone, they're going to be, they had to have been like, hell no. Like, it was a lucky break, a black and white film about two guys sitting around a gas station. It was a lucky break. Like, until films like that in a succession get lucky breaks, like, you're not going to see a boom, you know, with mainstream audiences again.
Okay. I can accept that answer. But what? How do you answer the fact that, you know, we haven't seen an international director make the impact that it should here because of the audiences?
No, that's just the dumbing down of society. Mm. I mean, in all honesty, because people would read. I mean, previously people had no problems with it, but they make them unavailable. And I mean, there aren't that many independent theater chains anymore. Like, they've all been gobbled up by corporations.
Right.
So if you're not in with the corporation, you're not being seen. So hopefully this internet thing, you know, keeps going and Netflix and everything else, and it breaks it out a little bit more and people actually catch on to it. But I mean, fucking, you do more reading in a day at work if you actually work a job that's not a drive-through job. And even then, you probably do more reading on your screen you punch in than you would 2 hours watching The Raid.
3 hours watching The Raid.
What? You know what I mean? Like, you do more reading in your day.
I gotcha.
Would require for that movie. It's just people are flipping lazy. Like, if these people honestly said, no, we're not selling you the rights to it, and we quit being money-grubbing whores, then that would end. I mean, people are selling the rights to the films. Like, just stop selling the rights, you know?
Yeah.
It's that easy.
So, Jeremy, where can our listeners find more about your endeavors?
That's a good question.
Ten Square.
You can look me up on Ten Square.
Okay.
I'm in the process of trying to find some time to give my YouTube channel a new look and re-upload some of my older videos. It's been a couple years since back when I was uploading them, they took a different format. And now when I go back and I try to watch them on YouTube, it just looks like crap compared to the HD stuff. But yeah, you can look at on YouTube. My channel is The Missing Patient, and or look me up on Internet Movie Database.
Sweet. Do you have any projects on the horizon? I know you mentioned one earlier, but anything that we can expect in the near future?
Nothing too soon. There's a short film that's right now I'm just going under the name The Pursuant. That one I'm really excited about. That one I'll be directing, and I've been working on the music as well for it. And then there's a screenplay that I'm writing, but doesn't have a title yet, but I can give you the the kind of synopsis.
Cool.
If you know. It's basically 1985 Chicago, and a guy in his just past middle age. His dream has been to be a comedian, and he comes to a point at the beginning of the movie where he realizes that he's not a good comedian at all. So instead, he becomes a heckler, and just following this guy around as he becomes this notorious heckler in Chicago 1985.
Wow, that sounds awesome. So this is going to be a feature or a short that you're hoping?
This is going to be a feature.
Cool.
I'm working with a good friend, Chris Fisher, and he'll be directing it. And we've been meeting up quite a bit, and it just gets more and more exciting every time we meet up.
Great. Well, Bradley.
Yeah. If anyone wins Powerball and wants to see a giant raccoon, a mute possum, and
I do. So
Gary Busey, Rick Moranis, and Getty Wanatabi samurai fighting, please send your payments to the Picking Brains podcast, which is picking-brains.com. I will make that film for you people. And be on the lookout. Should be out in October. Music video for the Casket Creatures, Zombie Werewolves from Outer Space.
Sweet. Can't wait. I've been checking out all the pictures from the behind the scenes, and it looked like a lot of fun. So
it was an absolute blast. And the Grips, Steve Pittman, Aiden Hayes, their whole team, Lintu, the makeup effects artist, everyone, Nathan, the band, were flipping awesome.
Sweet. Well, guys, that's all I got for you for this evening. Jeremy, thanks a lot. It was great having you. Hopefully we can have you back on in a couple months and catch up with you. Maybe have another fun topic to talk about.
Right on, anytime.
Cool. Brad, always a pleasure. Thanks for
it
sharing.
Is, Mr. Petrilli.
You're awesome. You're awesome. Yeah. You know it.
Happy anniversary to you.
Oh, yay. 1 year. Can't wait. It's amazing. Missed it, but we'll do it. We'll get that 1 year anniversary show in the next couple weeks. But again, thanks guys for sharing your filmmaking knowledge, and thank you all for tuning in. See you next week. Peace out.